WFM. I have to come and see you. Maybe once or twice a year. I think something looks a bit better. Then some downtown atmosphere. In the dance halls and the galleries. Written in the OTB. Synchronized like magic. The sun goes down in Jersey, rises over Little Italy. We can talk it up till the puck gets up. Swapping stories, sitting around in some all-night zoo,
watching it run like a movie. No hearts of gold, no nerves of steel. No blame for what we can and cannot feel. Good thinking. That's Joni Mitchell from the brand new album Dog Eat Dog and the first single from the recording, Good Friends. Joni is with us on Mixed Bag. I couldn't be more delighted. Joni, that particular song is a collaboration, or at least a duet, with another rather amazing musician of our time, Michael McDonald. Does bringing in another musician like that stir up your creative juices? Is that the thinking behind some of the more unexpected musical partnerships that you've had in your career?
Well, in the case of a vocalist, by that time the part is pretty much solidified. Like, Michael came, it was almost as written. So in that case, he was chosen for his wonderful color. I just love the sound of his voice, and I'd never really had a song that had the right strength of groove, and this just seemed to be the perfect opportunity to sing with him. When I bring in a player like Wayne Shorter, for instance, mm-hmm. that's different. That I give him carte blanche, you know. I he's so intuitive anyway that I just sit back, and as long as he is willing to do takes and as many tracks as we have, I just cut him loose, you know, because I'm always so curious, even though he's done magnificent licks on the first and second and third take. I can't, when he's playing, I can't stop. I want to know, well, what would he do now? Because he doesn't repeat himself. He's fluidly inventive. Every time he does something, it's different. I would say with Wayne, more than anyone else, he's very exciting to me as a player, because I think he has the entire musical gift. He has sense of structure. He has a beautiful sense of entrance and exit, melodic, and he also has a lot of wit. You know, he paints pictures with his instrument. It's mm-hmm. beyond notes. Not many players have that.
You're my magician. You make the night bright.
It's interesting to hear you use the phrase paint a picture, in as much as that is another one of your talents, Joni. How do the two overlap, and how are they compatible, and how are they incompatible, your musical talents, your artistic talents?
Well, let me see. All through my musical, I've been drawing all my life, drawing and painting. Music I didn't get involved in until I went to art school, so I started playing music really at about 18. And once I got involved in the music, I was always drawing and painting at the same time. So the first music that I made was simple. It was folk music, voice and a guitar. And at that time, I was mostly drawing. The work was also very simple. And when the music had a lot of when the poetry had a lot of adjectives and the music had a lot of grace notes, the painting was very filigreed and almost rococo, Aubrey Beardsley-ish. As the adjectives and the grace notes, the baroqueness fell off the music and it became more rhythmic. The drawing became more modern. As I began to overdub in the studio, the drawing began to have just a little bit of a color accent in the background. As the music headed further into the abstract, the painting also moved into the abstract.
Harry! Harry!
Find what you want!
All right. That's one thing that's always like, been a major difference between like the performing arts to me and being a painter, you know? Like a painter does a painting and he does a painting, that's it. You know, he's had the joy of creating it and he hangs it on some wall, somebody buys it again, or maybe nobody buys it and it sits up in a loft somewhere till he dies. But nobody ever says to him, you know, nobody ever said to Van Gogh, paint a Starry Night again, man. You know, well, he painted it, that was it. Let's sing this song together, okay? This song doesn't sound good with one lonely voice. It sounds good with the more voices on it, the better, and the more out-of-tune voices on it, the better. No, it was made for out-of-tune singing, this song. Yesterday a child came out to wonder, caught a dragonfly inside a jar. Fearful when the sky was full of thunder, so I'm getting my best out-of-tune voice on. Okay, here we go. And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind. Soon.
process of painting and the process of making music, playing music, is very similar in its action. When you're playing a guitar or you're working on a painting, the action produces pretty much the same headspace. Writing poetry is a different animal.
Uh-huh.
Writing poetry, you have to go, you have to kind of go in and plumb the depths, and you're not always inspired. In other words, it's not always fluid. Some of it is just craft, and you're almost like priming a well. And I think that poetry is probably the most difficult because it's so specific, you know, and because words mean so many different things to different people, because you're dealing with symbols like, for instance, the word love. You say just that word love to seven different people, it'll make one heart flutter, it'll make another person angry, depending on just the simple usage of words. So the correct choice and juxtaposition of words is the most difficult art for me, I think.
Sure.
To get it so that you're satisfied with it. And even then, it's amazing, like, the diversity of communication that it makes.
Well, then you take it the next step. Whatever your intention was, whatever your meaning was, pales in comparison of what someone out there in the larger audience gets out of it, takes out of it, what meaning that person, he or she, brings to it.
Well, the words strike against every individual life. Like, for instance, in the interview that I did, another interview here today, and we were talking about at the time he was going with a girl named Sharon, and they used to go skating at Wallman Rink. So listening to Song for Sharon Bell, it's the way it struck against that life was very specific.
You give up control over your art, in a sense.
Yeah.
And it becomes someone else's. I guess that's pleasing and frustrating at one and the same time.
Well, it is. For instance, I drew down a kind of a crazy person on myself, an obsessive fan at one point, who lived in the bushes for 5 years near my house and popped over the wall from time to time. And he was given my records at a very difficult time in his life, when he was kind of locked in his room and listening to this, and records are a very intimate form, you know. His sister had died on a public airline crash. So when he heard, "I shouldn't have got on this flight tonight," it took on a very personal meaning for, and I became confused as the gateway to God, the voice of his dead sister, you know. So there in a disordered mind, yeah. And yet that's not so crazy when you think about it. I mean, this song was as if he saw it as the voice of his dead sister speaking to him off the vinyl, but...
It's the dangerous and scary part.
That's the black end of the communication. There's nothing in a way you can do about that.
Look out the left, the captain said, the light's down there, that's where we'll land. I saw a falling star burn up above the Las Vegas sand. It wasn't the one that you gave to me that night down south between the trailers. Not the early one that you can wish upon. Not the northern one that guided in the sailors. Oh, star bright, you've got the loving that I like, all right. Turn this crazy bird. You got the touch so gentle and sweet, but you got that look so critical. Now I can't talk to you, baby, I get so weak. Sometimes I think love is just beautiful. Up there's the heavens, down there's the town. Blackness everywhere and little light shine. Oh, star bright, you got the love that I like, all right. Turn this crazy bird around, shine on this flight tonight.
Another of your lyrics interestingly enough, relates very personally to what we do here. You once included as a lyric of one of your songs a line about the holy man on the FM radio. Also, an inherent danger when misinterpreted, that darker side of the misinterpretation that could go on in the mass audience.
Right. I know there was a disc jockey in Los Angeles who was certain that I had written it for him, you know. It was somebody that I knew, and it wasn't directed to him, but that's the thing. The songs strike against a life, and they become very personal to the person, and I guess the difference between the sane and the insane is, you know, whether or not you decide it was written exactly for you and for you only,
right.
Or whether you think, oh, gee, this just fits me to a T.
Would it be fair play to ask you where that reference came from, or what you meant by holy man on the FM radio?
Well, let me put it generally rather than specifically.
Absolutely.
Because that's the other thing. I don't want to limit people's bringing their own experience to the words.
Mm-hmm.
So to tell you who it was for, I don't want to do that. But it was written about somebody who was played on FM radio. You are a holy man. You're enshrined on the FM airwaves.
Joni Mitchell from Ladies of the Canyon and Rainy Nighthouse. This is Pete Fornital on Mixed Bag, and to go along with our special program today, we have an extra added bonus, 5 complete sets of Joni Mitchell albums to give away. You heard right, 5 complete sets of Joni Mitchell albums from the very first right up to the new one, Dog Eat Dog, thanks to her 3 labels over the years, first Reprise, then Asylum, and currently Geffen Records. All you have to do, here we go again, is write the name of your favorite Joni Mitchell song on a postcard, along with any other comments you might have about today's program, and send it with your name and address to Mixed Bag, care of WNEW-FM, 655 3rd Avenue, New York, 10017. One postcard per person, please. We'll pick five cards at random, and those individuals will receive complete sets of Joni Mitchell albums. The address again is Mixed Bag, care of WNEW-FM, 655 3rd Avenue, New York, 10017. This is Pete Fornatale back with you on Mixed Bag with my special guest this morning, Joni Mitchell. As you were talking earlier, and I'd almost recommend our listeners with vast Joni Mitchell record collections to do the same, I was thinking of what you said in terms of how your art has changed and your music has changed by looking at the self-portrait that you did for the Clouds album versus the self-portrait that you did for the Wild Things Run Fast album. And indeed, what you said about the music and the art applies here, I think, don't you? The first one being simple, whereas the Wild Things Run Fast having many more layers of communication in it. And could similarly the same thing said about the music on these two albums?
Well, looking at them now, because I haven't seen them side by side like that, they are stylistically more compatible than some of the others, don't you think? Like, you can almost tell that they were done by the same artist. Some of them you would never know, you know.
And of course, the subject matter is exactly the same, yourself, but yourself in close up and yourself from a distance. Oh, so by the way, I always wanted to ask you. Eric Anderson told me that this cover was based upon a photograph.
Yeah, he took a Polaroid. It's true. He took the Polaroid of me leaning on the TV set like that.
Oh, that's great.
But I changed the costume and, you know, put the horses in.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And cheated the perspective on the table there so you get another plane.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like to stick with this idea for just a bit, if only because it does serve as a way of getting an overview of your career from this first album that I have here in my hands all the way up to the brand new one, Dog Eat Dog. We have a feature on the show called Maiden Voyage, where we play all or most of the first album by a major artist. And your first record was one of the earliest that we featured in that context. And while I was listening to it that morning on the show, I was struck by the bareness of it, the absolute simplicity and beauty of it. And I measured that against all of the things that you've done since and wondered to myself, could you ever do an album like this one again?
Well, my voice has changed considerably since then. So,
right.
And my sense, I couldn't do it exactly like that because I've assimilated the blues, I've assimilated, this is pretty much British Isles influenced music. The blues haven't entered into the picture. It's very under the rule of Queen Lizzie. You know what I mean? It's like very white Anglo-Saxon.
So in that sense, of course, you couldn't do an album.
I could do an acoustic album, but it would be quite different. My rhythmic sense has changed. My voice has deepened. I don't, you know, I've lost off the top and gamed on the bottom. I have a different sense of expression.
With sweets, he takes you up streets, and the rain comes down. Sidewalk markets locked up tight, and umbrellas bright on a gray background. There's oil and puddles in taffeta patterns that run down the drain. In colored arrangements that Michael will change with the stick that he found. Thank you.
faces to greet, but we run on laughing with no one to meet. Night in the city looks bright to me. Night in the city looks fine. Looks fine. Come spilling out into the street. Colors go waltzing in time.
This album, of course, was produced by David Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you maintained a relationship with David over the years and how you feel about his current troubles.
I haven't seen him for a long time. I saw a concert that he and Stephen and Graham gave in Los Angeles some years back, and at that point he didn't look well. And I was just kind of shocked because at that point I hadn't seen him for some years.
Mm.
And he reminded me that I shouldn't say anything to him while I was still a chain smoker.
Oh, interesting. We spoke about the dark side earlier in terms of the audience. David is taking on this representation of the dark side for a living performer right now. And I wonder how you have dealt with those demons over the course of your own career. And if you feel you're in command of them in a way that David might not be currently.
I'm still a chain smoker.
Mm. What are we going to do about that, friends?
There, but for fortune. You know, cigarettes and coffee are the things that I have a hard time giving up. You know, I mean, having passed through rock and roll, well, you in the drug generation, you know, I've sampled everything. But nothing was permanently obsessive for me. It all turned left. It's sooner or later you realize when I take this substance, I feel worse than before I took it.
Yeah.
So what's the point? You know, after you go through that a few times, and then it's easy to quit. With tobacco, I'm truly an addict. I mean, I'll smoke with chronic bronchitis. I'll smoke through it where, you know, it's just... So I understand addiction.
You've incorporated it into your art as well on the new album.
Oh, yeah, the Nicotine Attack.
Nicotine Attack, and also... you've used some unique instrumentation on your albums over the years, Joni, but a cigarette machine?
Well, the way that came about was when we were making the... That was recorded for the last album, for the Wild Things album.
Yeah.
At A&M, the cigarette machine was out in the parking lot, and the guy who serviced it, who stocked it, didn't. He just didn't show up for months and months. So first my brand ran out, then the next favorite brand ran out, and soon it was down to Camel Plains and Cools. You know, like, I mean, you really had to be desperate. So one night I said to Skipper, who was the assistant on that record, you know, grab an extension cord, we're going to mic the machine, because the sound of the gears pushing out nothing when you hit a chamber that was empty was so rhythmic and interesting. When it had two little feminine squeaks in the gears, and so we stuck a mic up inside of it, and that is neither sampled nor looped. That's acoustic cigarette machine.
Let's get back on the track here. I'm going to just, I would almost assume that these two, your first two records, can pretty much be considered together. One was an extension of and an outgrowth of the first, certainly.
The first two records, I had nearly all of the songs that composed those first two before I started recording. But the second album, On the Clouds, my voice changes radically because I'd been singing, you know, CSN was just... forming at that time, and we used to sit around and sing a lot, and in order to blend with them you had to adopt a kind of a vocal affectation to get the blend. In order for their three distinct voices to meld,
mm-hmm.
They had to develop.
Mm-hmm. was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I heard was a song outside my window, and the traffic wrote the words. It came a ringing up like Christmas bells, and wrapping up like pipes and drums. Oh, won't you stay? We'll put on the day, and we'll wear it till the night comes. It was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I saw was the sun through yellow curtains and a rainbow on the wall. Blue, red, green and gold to welcome you, crimson crystal beads to beckon. Oh, won't you stay? We'll put on the day, there's a sunshine every second.